This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for Radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. And we're going to say hello to a sponsor today, a new sponsor. Mercury Insurance is with us. America on the Road is brought to you by Mercury Insurance and DrivingToday.com. We're very happy to have Mercury Insurance on board with us. We hope we have a lengthy association with the folks at Mercury Insurance. I'm Jack DeRed. With me is co-host Chris Teague, back from being injured last week. Thanks for being with us, Chris.
Thank you for having me, Jack. I'm here at least partially in mind and body, so it's good to be back on doing a normal schedule for once.
Yeah, you smacked your head, but you sound remarkably coherent, and so I guess it didn't do you any harm.
I don't know what that says about my normal state of mind, but yes, happy to be clear-headed today.
Yeah, well, good. And of course, you write for Ford Authority and Forbes and Driving Today, among others. And I write for Forbes and J.D. Power and Auto by Tell, among others, too. So, and of course, Driving Today. So we are covering the automotive scene for a bevy of publications. This week, we have a really interesting and special guest. His name is Tony Greco. We're right on the news here because the Ford Raptor has just been introduced, and he is the program manager. I interviewed him a day or so ago, and so we have hot off the press all the new tech on the 2021 Raptor, a very impressive vehicle, and we're going to dive deep with Tony because he knows more about it, I think, than probably anybody. In the car review segment, Chris will be discussing a competitor to that vehicle. What are you going to be discussing, Chris?
The 2021 Ram 1500 TRX.
Ah, well, geez, we've got super trucks coming out our ears this week. And I'll be talking about a sedan, a midsize sedan, the Hyundai Sonata, very likable midsize sedan with a few new features for 2021. But before we do any of that, let's take a look at what's hottest in automotive news from around the globe. What do you have for us, Chris?
I've got an update of sorts on a story we talked about a few weeks ago, Jack. It's the Apple car. The rumors that we were discussing at that point in time appear to be heading towards a reality. The announcement, or at least the report, is that Apple is investing $3.6 billion in Kia, which will give them an equity stake to build a manufacturing facility in Georgia to put these cars together.
It's an interesting one there because Kia, of course, is controlled by Hyundai. I'm not sure whether they're wholly owned or whether they're just controlled. And it's interesting that this is an investment in Kia as opposed to an investment in Hyundai. But we'll have to see how that unfolds. Obviously, Apple doesn't have any auto manufacturing capabilities. Probably not very much manufacturing capabilities for anything, actually. So we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, they don't have much capability in the manufacturing realm, but they have plenty of money and a lot of ways that they can spend that to get that done. So the announcement is expected to come later this month, so I'll be watching, and we could talk about this again, but it's should be an exciting development to see what they come up with.
Absolutely. They have been working on, of course, they have tech. You know, they are tech. When you talk about tech, it's synonymous with Apple, and they have been working on automobiles for years and years and years, some very visible, and then they kind of went under the radar with this for several years, but we resurfaced rumors about this a few weeks ago, and it seems like they're accelerating the process.
Yeah, hopefully they work as easily as my iPhone does, but that they are more durable than my iPhone screen.
Okay. Yeah, just don't drop your Apple car, right? It'll shatter. And then you'll have to take it to some aftermarket guy who, you know, does weird things with it. And then it's good as new, except it doesn't have the warranty anymore.
Right.
Well, I participated in the preview and then the unveiling of the Cadillac CT4 and CT5 V-Series Blackwings. These are two vehicles that have multiple names and confusing multiple names. But the CT4 and CT5 are sedans from Cadillac, pretty cool sedans, maybe under the radar sedans. And then the V-Series is the performance version of each of those. And then the Blackwing version is the high performance version of the V-Series. So It's kind of a niche of a niche of a niche, but amazing kind of performance potential. The CT5 V-Series Blackwing will have a 668 horsepower, 6.2 liter supercharged V8. It'll go from 0 to 60 in just 3.7 seconds. I mean, that's kind of amazing, more than a little amazing. I think we told you last week about a very similar car from BMW, the M5 CS. That will only have 627 horsepower and be a tad bit not as quick. I can't say slower for a car like that, but a car with 600 horsepower. But it just shows you how serious Cadillac is about performance. And then the CT4 V-Series Blackwing will have a 472 horsepower, 3.6 liter twin turbo V6. And it'll go 0 to 60 in 3.8 seconds. And the top speeds of these things are mind-boggling as well. The CT5 V-Blackwing, more than 200 miles an hour. That's kind of crazy.
That is crazy, especially, you know, given that you can have people sitting in the back seat at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember when we used to do top speed testing at Motor Trend, and to get something that would approach 200 miles an hour, of course, this is several decades ago now, was really pushing it. And now we have a just a very pleasant around town kind of sedan that'll also go 200 miles an hour. It's just... you scratch your head, and it's amazing what tech we have and what tech is being turned loose on cars out there. And it'll be interesting to see how well received this is in the enthusiast community, because certainly Cadillac, while they have some recent racing successes, they're a bit under the general radar, I think. In enthusiast circles, it's fairly well known that Cadillac has been racing for a while, but I'm not sure the general public has paid much attention to that at all. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think that's kind of a shame. But, you know, the cars are built to compete, especially with the Europeans. You know, the most recent BMW M3 hasn't been as well received as previous versions of the car. And the fact that both of these come standard with a manual transmission and gobs of power, and frankly, a great chassis tuning on both of them. You know, I think they're going to end up being the ones to beat, obviously. But like you said, when you go out to buy a performance car, is Cadillac the first name on your mind? Probably not, unless you're an enthusiast. So hopefully they sell enough of them, although this might be the last gasp for that sort of gigantic power, big V8 or big power V6 in a car we see for a while.
I'm glad you mentioned the six-speed manual transmission, too, because that seems kind of throwback to me. It just doesn't seem like a modern thing to do. I think there's people who still love manual transmissions, but I think as modern as everything else about these Blackwings is, I was a bit taken aback by the six-speed manual. Of course, you can get a 10-speed automatic, and maybe it's even quicker with the 10-speed automatic. I wouldn't be surprised if it were. But the fact that you can get a manual trans and they're kind of leading with that took me by surprise.
Yeah, you know, I think the engagement factor is definitely there, but modern dual clutch gearboxes and automatic transmissions have proven that they're both quicker and more fuel efficient than a human driver is. You know, Porsche's done many tests with their dual clutch and things like that. So it is an interesting choice, but I think it's great for engagement. If that's what you really want someone to be connected to the car, I can see why that would be an appealing choice.
Right. And I think it's probably right for their demographic as well. The CT4V Blackwing will have a base price of almost $60,000, $59,990 to be exact. And the base price of the CT5V Blackwing will be $84,990. And then that includes a $1,000, $995 destination charge. So reservations are open now. You can order yours at Cadillac.com, and deliveries will be scheduled for later this summer.
Hopefully I get to drive one.
Yeah, I hope we both get to drive one. Well, in a more accessible vehicle, and maybe quite accessible for the Teague family of four, or the Nered family of five for that matter, is the 2022 Nissan Pathfinder. This is a sport utility vehicle that has a very proud history, and it's all new for 2022 and is about to come to market. It's nice that we're seeing 2022s already. It will have a 9-speed transmission, intelligent 4-wheel drive with terrain mode. Love those because you might have, you're driving it on 2-lane or 4-lane roads, or, you know, maybe a gravel driveway or something. Seating for up to 8, and I kid, this is going to have some decent off-road prowess. And I actually asked them about that, and it's not so much, I think, that Pathfinder drivers will take them off-road. I think they just like to think that they could, and there's something to that. I mean, look at all the people who are driving Land Rovers and Range Rovers around. They barely even get them dirty, right?
I agree. The drive modes do come in handy here in Maine and other places, I would say, snow and other conditions where they actually do apply. But I do agree that most will probably stick to paved surfaces in most situations.
Yep. New from the ground up, it has, one of the highlights, I think, is the fact that it's going to have two-tone available. What do you think about a two-tone for a big SUV like that, a big three-row SUV?
Well, Nissan's done a good job with it. I think the Kicks had a two-tone roof, if I'm not mistaken, and they've done a good job with it. So I'm fine with the larger SUV having it, although it's not very common. I can't recall the last time I've seen one.
Yeah, well, we'll see how that goes. And that will come out, I guess, a little later this year. Here's a story that we were kicking around a little bit before we decided to record, and it's about the VW ID.4, their electric vehicle that is coming our way, and it communicates with something that seems like out of science fiction. It communicates with light, and you know, I was trying to figure out exactly how it communicates and what it's trying to communicate. Do you have a sense of what's going on here, Chris, with how it's communicating and what it's trying to tell us? Is it like ET or something? I'm just trying to figure it out.
Yeah, so I'm going to stumble my way through this, and this is my rudimentary understanding is that Volkswagen was looking for a more personal way for the driver or the human to interact with the car instead of just input and response. And they're doing this with what they're saying is, they're saying 54 multicolored LEDs that are located, that will be located at the bottom of the windshield behind the cockpit. So this is designed to be visible just in the driver's peripheral vision and from some angles outside the vehicle. And so this is to tell anything from battery level and other things. In vehicle navigation, the light shows you, you know, directional prompts and things like that. So depending on the implementation here, it could either be, I think, just in, again, the flash of time that I've spent on it, either very distracting or very helpful. So it'll be interesting to see how they implement it. But I think the concept is neat.
Yeah, I do too. I guess when you have an emergency braking event, for example, it will flash red at you, which kind of makes sense. I get that. And then if it's really bad, I guess you see a bright white light and you approach it. that might be the...
Hopefully it doesn't get to that.
Yeah, that might be the final chapter there of the ID.4 communicating with light. Well, I guess that's all the time we have for news in this edition of America on the Road. When we come back, we will be road testing some vehicles. So stay with us with Chris Teague. We're happy he's back with us with Chris Teague. This is Jack Nerad. And thanks so much for being with us right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague, Jack Nerad with you, and it is road test time. We're quite excited, and this is a special on super trucks, I guess. I'm the odd man out driving the Hyundai Sonata midsize car, but we both have the program manager of the Ford Raptor, the just-introduced Ford Raptor, and Chris, you were driving the all-new 2021 Ram 1500 TRX. Give us your impressions of that thing.
I don't know if I was driving it or if it was driving me at certain points of time, but I will say, what a truck. This has the supercharged 6.2-liter Hemi that is also seen in the Hellcat cars, and you and I have both driven several of those to great effect, and Here it's been tuned to 702 horsepower with 650 pound-feet of torque. And Ram says that'll do 0 to 60 in 4.5 seconds. And it certainly feels that quick. It feels every bit like it, you would imagine a trophy truck would feel on the road. When you really lay into the throttle, the truck just scoots back and lays down and goes. So quite a rowdy vehicle with a lot of noise behind it. And, you know, I'm not sure, but I would like a truck like this. I'm not sure how many people would actually use it to its fullest extent. We were talking in the last segment, Jack, about the Pathfinder going off-road. How do you think TRX buyers are using their trucks and not just for YouTube shenanigans? Do you think they're actually using it for real off-roading?
Well, I think some probably will. I think maybe more so than, and I think what's telling about the TRX, and I had a chance to drive it at their intro, I guess, late last year when we were still traveling around a little bit and able to do that kind of stuff, was how good it is as an around-town, just everyday vehicle. That's what really surprised me most about it. I mean, with 702 horsepower and that kind of thing, you expect, and the amount of wheel travel it has, you expect that it would really go, but it doesn't beat you up around town either, and it's easy to drive around town. And I think that's a big difference between it and, say, a home-built off-roader that would probably be just absolutely terrible to drive around town.
I agree. You know, under normal conditions, it feels pretty much like a normal truck, a very wide normal truck, but a normal truck. So Ram bumped out the track on the standard 1500 by 8 inches, or the body has been widened 8 inches to accommodate the larger tires, I should say. And you definitely feel that in, you know, drive-throughs and parking lots and places like that. But everywhere else, it feels like a normal truck. It's extremely comfortable, probably due in part to that long suspension travel and the big beefy tires that it has. But inside, this thing had all the luxury trappings. It's a 12-inch infotainment screen that runs Uconnect 5, very excellent software. Leather with Alcantara sort of suede material seats. They were heated and cooled, heated steering wheel. Plenty of room for the kids and the dog. We're in the middle of a move right now, and I was able to move plenty of gear in the back of the truck, although I will say it became probably the world's most inefficient moving truck. I averaged somewhere around 9.5, 10 miles per gallon in my time with it. So, you know, quite a beefy vehicle to be using for moving. But overall, as you say, Jack, you know, very quick truck, very powerful, makes a big statement with the noise that it puts out. Everybody, it drew more eyes, I would think, than probably a supercar, especially here in Maine, where so many people drive the big lifted pickup trucks that they build themselves. And all around, you know, almost $80,000 truck, or I should say almost $90,000 truck. This one was 87 and some change after the options. But if you can afford it and need the capability, I don't think there's much else like it. And even when the Raptor shows up later on, it's got some catching up to do.
Absolutely. And if you want bragging rights, I think TRX is absolutely a way to go. It looks the part, it acts the part, it has all the goods. And you know, I'm not a dyed-in-the-wool off-roader. I've done my share of off-roading, and I'm sure there are plenty of people who know a lot more about it than I do. But I would think that, you know, right out of the box, from everything I've seen, this vehicle will get the job done. So certainly worth a look if you care about that, or if you just care about styling, you know, going to the roadhouse on the weekend and having people, you know, kind of drool over your vehicle. I'll tell you, the TRX is one that's going to get them doing that.
Absolutely.
The vehicle I was driving is a bit different, a little more mainstream, shall we say, although these days the sedan isn't as mainstream as it used to be. But this is one of the most likable midsize sedans out there. This is the 2021 version of the Hyundai Sonata, and it has just a ton going for it, I think. And, you know, let me dive in first and talk a bit about its tech. Because I think that's what a lot of people care about these days, for one thing. It has a high-definition, customizable 10.25-inch touchscreen. The dash spans the full width of the cabin, and it also includes a 2.3-inch digital instrument cluster. So you have those things right in front of you. The audio and video navigation functions are right up front and personal, very easily accessible. And of course, if you use the turn signals, you also get to see what's going on out the side, because it activates a camera that then acts as kind of a side view mirror. And the screen also accommodates a split screen function, so a ton of stuff going on there. And then there's a head-up display beyond the two displays we've already talked about. And it's a very bright head-up display. You probably noticed this, Chris. I certainly have. When I wear some pairs of sunglasses, I don't get to see the head-up display frequently. I think if I have polarized sunglasses, very often the head-up display just disappears. But this has enough power to kind of burn through that, and a lot of information in the head-up display. And Bose premium sound system. So, you know, a lot of chatter about connectivity and tech, but it's important. This also has wireless smartphone charging and a charging pad that actually has a cooling fan. So that's kind of neat. You know how that Apple phone can get all heated up when it's charging. I guess that's what lithium-ion batteries do. The interesting thing, I think, is under the hood. This is where they might lose me a little bit. These are very likable powertrains, don't get me wrong. But it isn't like one is the power version and one is the more mundane version. They're both about the same in terms of output. 180 horsepower, 1.6-liter turbocharged four-cylinder, or a 191 horsepower, 2.5-liter normally aspirated four-cylinder. And interestingly, I think the more performance-oriented is the lower horsepower engine, because it has a broader torque curve and the power is more accessible. That's probably beyond what people who are going to buy a Sonata are going to care about anyway. I think either of these engines would be just fine for them. For 2021, they are also adding 19-inch alloy wheels with a Pirelli P0 tires. So they're going even a little beyond what they had gone before in terms of performance. This, again, might be more performance than the typical Sonata buyer or any Sonata buyer is really going to call for. But this is a thoroughly likable midsize sedan. Its quality record is very, very good. I think it looks great. I didn't talk about the looks much at all, but both inside and out, it's a good-looking vehicle. So what's your take on the Sonata this time around?
I like the newest generation's styling. I reviewed the hybrid Sonata just a few months ago now, well, probably 6 months ago now, and raved about the styling. They've done a great job. And, you know, the technology offerings that Hyundai has put into their cars, and Kia too, for that matter, they've brought the high-level tech like Apple CarPlay and Android Auto and democratized it to a degree, because I think they're standard in the Sonata and several other, gee, I can't talk today. Maybe my head is leaving me. Several other of their cars. So they've done a great job with the tech. And as you said, with the head-up display, the one that I tested came with that. And I do wear prescription polarized sunglasses and was able to see it just fine. So I don't think buyers of Hyundai have to worry about whether they're missing out on something in an Accord or a Camry anymore. And that's been the case for a few years now, but especially with the latest models.
Yeah, I think so. We have two, I think, really good buys. I mean, beyond just kind of average buys, I think the Ram 1500 TRX is a great buy, even though super expensive. It is a really, really cool vehicle. And we will see how it stacks up when we talk with our guest coming up, who is the program manager of the Ford Raptor. It's you know, kind of a blood competitor. And of course, then the Hyundai Sonata, a whole different kind of thing, but a different value that starts out at about $23,000 and can go up to about $35,000 fully equipped. So a whole different level of expense and a different level of enjoyment, but plenty of enjoyment there. So cool vehicles.
Yeah, all fronts.
Yes. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with Tony Greco. He is the program manager of the Ford Raptor Super Truck, and an interesting guy. I had a great conversation with him. I think you'll enjoy it. So stay with us for that when we come back right here with Chris Teague. This is Jack Nerad on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack DeRed back with you, and we're very excited with our next guest. Tony Greco is the program manager on one of the coolest vehicles out there. It's the Ford F-150 Raptor, a vehicle we've loved for a long time, and now there's a new 2021 version. Tony, thanks so much for being with us. We really do appreciate it.
It's great to be here with you, Jack.
Let's talk about this thing. I mean, you just introduced this vehicle, this version of the vehicle. What gets you most excited about it?
Well, this has been quite a journey for me personally. So I've been in this role now for 5+ years. So I was around for the last gen Raptor and observed the first gen from a distance. But this one really feels like I got a lot of ownership in this thing. And I'm pretty excited about, first and foremost, everything that we've done with the chassis. That's really where I would say the passion lies.
Right, and a lot of changes to the chassis here, but let's set the stage a little bit for our listeners. What is basically the product brief for the Ford Raptor and for the 2021 Ford Raptor? What are you trying to accomplish with this vehicle?
Yeah, so this is a continuing story. It started over a decade ago when we put out the first generation Raptor back in 2009 in the doldrums of the auto industry, when we really carved out a new segment, new small truck segment that's kind of grown year after year after year, and we're now on our third generation. So what we were passionate about and what we were trying to do was find those customers that really wanted to experience the off-road the way the passion within Ford Performance has always been for that style of desert racing and the trophy trucks that are associated with it. And that's really kind of the vision that continues to be in place is, you know, just striving to always push Raptor closer and closer to that a style of performance that you get out of those desert buggies.
Right. Ford has always had a heritage in doing great off-road trucks and great off-road vehicles. Of course, now the Bronco is out there kind of expressing that in a whole new way. But in a lot of ways, I guess this kind of foretold what's going on with the Bronco. But just describe to us, you know, how it's evolved over time, how the Raptor has evolved.
Yeah, so first of all, the Bronco is a great product. It's something that I was really excited about personally because I remember just as a kid, it was such an iconic a Ford nameplate, and I was so happy that they brought it back. It does express itself in the off-road in a slightly different way than the Raptor does. Raptor back in its first generation, developed in out of a shoestring budget with a really small team of passionate engineers that wanted to see something new in the space. Once we got that initial traction and we went into the second generation, the truck evolved both in capability, but also you started to see that the uniqueness at the part level, certainly in the powertrain, the chassis. Started to migrate away from the F-150 and started to really get its own identity in the second generation. And then when the third generation, which is the truck we're talking about now, comes on and gets into dealer lots, you're going to see that it really has evolved yet again into something that is very differentiated from F-150 and takes the capability from the last gen truck and just expands that quite a bit.
Let's talk about the specifics a little bit, and you alluded to the suspension already, so maybe that's a good place to start. Why don't you tell us what you've done with the suspension of this thing? Obviously, when you're doing an off-road truck, a desert runner kind of truck, suspension is really where a lot of the tech is at. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so this will be the first F-Series, and we're checking to make sure we're not missing some 1940s or 1950s truck that maybe did have a coil spring rear suspension. We don't believe so, but we believe this is the first rear coil springed F-Series to come to production, and we're quite proud of the design that is associated with that five-link Panhard bar style of design that we've come up with, because it's really a no compromise type of design. We looked within the vast amount of suspension components that are available to us for reuse. Didn't quite find what we needed for the Raptor customer, so we designed it from scratch. It's purpose-built and without compromise. And that's really where the story of this Raptor starts, is in the rear suspension, coming off the leaf spring architecture and onto the coil spring. So that's where it starts, Jack. And then, you know, you can't just do something like that in the rear and not then go up to the front of the truck and start to see that, well, now you got to make some changes up there so you rebalance everything out. So we spent a lot of time, you know, getting the rear figured out. Once we did that, we went to the front. There's some suspension geometry changes that came with that. Lots of new part design in the front, and it really enabled the travel that we're bringing with this truck, 14 inches in the front, 15 in the rear. And that's a pretty amazing place to be from a production, a truck rolling off of a production assembly line with a lot of other F-150s. And when you look at comparing to the first generation, I mean, 25% travel, suspension travel, front and rear over the first gen just 10 years ago, that's pretty substantial.
Tell our listeners who are not off-roaders and desert runners why a coil spring suspension with that kind of travel is so valuable.
Yeah, so if you know, and I've had the experience of doing this, right? If you take a regular F-150 or a whatever, and just a full size pickup, and you take it into the trails, and those trails start to get, you know, whoops, where you're starting to get the undulations, and you're starting to get some content that you have to deal with. What happens in a regular truck that isn't a Raptor, for example, is you start to run out of shock, and you start to run out of the ability to rebound the content. So you end up bottoming out, and you're constantly bashing the front of the truck onto those bumps. What the Raptor attempts to do is 6 inches wider, and when you widen the truck, you lower the center of gravity. It's much more nimble. Once you do that and you add the suspension and then the technology and you add the travel. So the travel, for example, when it's 14 inches, and don't quote me exactly what the F-150 is, but it's probably 7 or 8 inches. It's in that range. It's quite a bit of absorbing of those bumps, right? So you're able to go very quickly through what you would normally be, you know, kind of riding over and back down and back up and back down, whereas the Raptor tends to, when it gets to speed, kind of stay on top a bit more on that content, and that's where the travel is key.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like you're floating over the tops of the bumps as opposed to banging the bump stops each time and then giving all kinds of really unwanted kind of actions into the truck, right?
Yeah, it's you know, like those trophy trucks, and, you know, they got 24, 25 inches of travel. I mean, they sit right on top of those bumps, and they never really go into the whoops, because once they get to speed, they can stay at the very top. That's always the vision, of course, and we certainly try to always get closer to that. But that's the idea, is that you're not spending time at the bottom of the whoop. You're spending time from going from the top of one whoop to the next, and really minimizing the amount of, you know, undulation allows the truck to be quicker. But when you do that, right, the travel is critical, and obviously a coil spring rear suspension where you don't have all that wind up in the leaf spring, that really does, you know, put that really is a huge difference between a third gen Raptor and a second gen Raptor.
Yeah, well, I can imagine it'd be massively different. Let's talk a bit about shocks. Obviously, that's maybe the next thing to talk about when we're talking about suspension. And you have very sophisticated shocks in the new Raptor.
Yeah, we do. And honestly, I want to say, Jack, thanks for asking the question about the shocks. Never really experienced in my 20-year career the kind of relationship that we have with Fox. That's not really an OEM to supplier relationship. That's really just a partnership. They are there with us in the development trips. They are there in conference room meetings, in front of in front of the tube, looking at CAD. These guys have a vested interest in making the truck better. So when we come forward to say, this is what we want to do, and this is the expectation from the shock, they're there saying, yes, that's what will bring this, but we could use a little bit of help on the truck side. And it's a very symbiotic thing with Fox. And so in last gen Raptor, we introduced the live valve technology. Now this is the automated jounce side, where you have a computer, a module basically commanding damping rates to the shocks. And we had ride height sensors in the front. We've now put ride height sensors in the rear, and the technology in that live valve system has grown and gotten more, it's gotten faster and it's gotten more advanced. And so the shocks that you have now in the third gen, right, they are really utilizing inputs from corner sensors, corner suspension sensors, and they then take that and they process that information at an incredible rate. So really, what we talked about yesterday in the briefing when we spoke to the media and talked about the technical aspects of the hardware, we said that, you know, the live valve system is capable of commanding inputs to the shock at 500 times per second. That's roughly the speed of human thought. And if you think about
that, and it's probably faster than my thought, Tony.
Well, certainly faster than mine, Jack. Honestly, when you start to talk about that type of speed, right? It's interesting when you ride in a Raptor. The shocks now, like when it's almost to a point where as soon as you are in the bump or in the whoop or in the content, that shock has already onto the next, and has already dampened the truck where it needs to, and it's onto the next. The speed is it's just an amazing thing, and the thing that is the really cool part about Fox is that not only do they like give you a shock that is capable of incredibly aggressive off-road driving, but then that same shock, without doing anything, right? You flip onto the pavement. And that Raptor becomes an awesome daily driver that's got an incredibly plush ride.
I think that's really the magic of the Raptor, I think, over time, too. And this time around, probably even more so, although I have yet to drive it, you've spent a lot of time, you know, as you've been developing this. But, you know, that switch from just going crazy through the whoops to drive into the grocery store and feeling perfectly comfortable doing that's a magic kind of combination that you don't get out of a home-built off-roader, right?
Yep, and that's always, Jack, I'm glad you brought that up. That's always kind of one of the, you know, the inviolables, right? You can't continue to push the envelope off-road and trade off on-road. Right? Because we have customers that want to go off-road, no doubt. But, you know, Jack, honestly, you know, we have Raptors running around in New York City. And we have Raptors running around, you know, the last time, well, we're in COVID now, but pre-COVID, I visited Belgium. You know, I get off the plane, I get into a taxi, not more than, you know, not more than 2 miles away from the airport, and I'm seeing a Raptor, right? So Raptors are everywhere. Raptors are in China. Raptors are in India. Raptors are in South Africa and South America. Raptors are in Mexico. Raptors are in big cities. They're in small cities. It's not, you can't just, you know, like push this thing over index on the off-road and forget about the on-road, because we have customers all over the map. We have people that are trading in luxury vehicles, luxury Land Rovers and Mercedes, and walking into Raptors. And that's a tremendously great feeling for us, but you can't over-index on the off-road and forget about on-road. You cannot degrade the on-road performance.
Right, and I think probably the opposite is true too, Tony, right? I mean, it is a prestige luxury vehicle in a lot of ways, a vehicle that really lends a great deal of panache to anybody who drives it because of its off-road prowess, right? Because of what it brings to the party. If you lose that, You're losing a big part of what the Raptor should be.
Well, Jack, therein lies the secret. When I took this role, that was the best advice that I got from somebody who had been around from the first generation. And he said to me, he said, you must always, always, always design for the 1%. That 1% hyper critical, like hyper passionate off-roader, that's the guy who you design the truck for. Because then once you get that figured out, right, everyone else comes with it, right? The credibility though, you got to get with that small percentage of folks that are actually capable of taking this truck to the limit, which by the way, is getting more and more difficult to do. But that's who we design for. And then everyone else, right? Everyone else will come when you have that credibility. What I'm saying to you is that, yes, we do that. Every time we make a decision, trophy trucks and desert racing are at the heart of what we do. But what we also said at the very beginning of this program, because there's always that risk, is that if you over-index on the off-road and you lose the on-road kind of plushness and that piece of it, that's not right either. So finding that balance is critical.
Yeah, and it's nice to have, I imagine you have pretty strong support within Ford Motor Company now as you're on the third generation of this thing, to follow that passion as opposed to, you know, dumbing this vehicle down, for lack of a better term on that.
Yeah, I would tell you that it's a fan favorite of the management, the upper management. Raptor now is definitely a it's become one of those iconic. The brand is very strong, and it's a point of pride within Ford Motor Company, within, you know, the assembly plant. When I go to the assembly plant, you know, which makes beautiful F-150s all day long. There's still a little bit of a thing with Raptor that, you know, everyone's very proud that it's that they're part of that. So I especially like to make sure that, you know, anytime I have an opportunity to go down there and say thank you to the men and women that are assembling the truck, it that's an important thing. And it's they do what needs to be done to keep the Raptor where it is. They're big heroes in all of this, but it's definitely a fan favorite within the company and certainly within the Ford family.
Well, very, very cool. Let's go back to some specifics. And one of the specifics I think revolves around tires, right? That's a big change for you, or something where you've upgraded tires. They're critical when you're going off-road, obviously. Talk about that, would you?
Yeah. I mean, so we've always had great tires on Raptors. So we've always been, BFG and the KO2s. The KO2s are fantastic tires. And so we had started designing the 5-link rear suspension. We had already started designing the front suspension. And we had this crazy idea. Hey, what about if we somehow got 37s on this truck, and we want to do it at job one? We don't want to do it like when we come back in the new body style. We want to be on 37s. Is that possible? Can we do that? And it was just kind of one of those crazy things. We had talked about it before. Putting 37s on a truck is something that tends to happen with customers who kind of come out of their, after 50,000 miles of on their factory tires, they might transition to a 37. And we have a lot of customers that do that. And we've been asked, like, hey, can you guys look at 37s? But to actually put a 37-inch tire on this truck, right, you really run into two issues with that. Number one, those are big, big tires. And so they certainly get into the clearance zones of other parts. So you have to make sure that if you're going to put that tire on this Raptor, right, you can't have a customer go off-road and then that tire interferes with other parts, you damage other parts. That's not the right execution. So there's a whole engineering piece to getting that figured out. Once that's figured out, right, then it's the manufacturing piece where you're actually like, hey, can you actually roll a Raptor, which is already, a big, tall truck, you know, the reach in the engine compartment, for example, when it's already on the ground, when 35-inch tires is already a significant ergonomic issue in the plant. Now you're asking the plant, hey, can you put 37s on it? There's a whole thing in the plant as well. So I kind of try to tell people it's a 15-month-ish process to work out all of the engineering that needed to go into the tire and then all of the assembly manufacturing piece. And don't underestimate the really cool thing with this 37 is that the spare is full size and underbed mounted where it belongs, right? We didn't hit the easy button and throw that thing in the bed and take your bed space. And we certainly didn't give you an undersized spare. We did it the right way. We gave you a 37 inch spare tire that's under the bed. But that, Jack, shouldn't be underestimated. That is an immense amount of work from the team. And I couldn't be prouder of that one thing that we did, because it's a game changer with that incremental running clearance. It's a game changer when you take a better approach and departure angle in those whoops, in those, when you're running off at high speed off road. It's a game changer.
Well, I'm glad you're telling us about that, Tony, because I was just about to ask you, doing all that you did and jumping through all those flaming hoops to put 37s on here, there's got to be advantages to that that make it all worthwhile. And you told about some of them, but what are some of the others?
Yeah, so just in general, what you're going to get with the 37 is you're higher off the ground, right? You're two-ish inches. I don't know the exact number is in some spec. I'm sure we can get for the folks listening, but it's a substantial amount off the ground. It doesn't seem like a lot, but when you lift it off the ground, when you lift the truck off the ground, you're also taking the approach and departure angle. So you're able to now go into, you're able to go into the trail, into the content, and you're higher off the ground. And then, because we didn't just take the shock from, hey, we developed the shock for the 35 inch and now we slap it on the 37 inch. No, the 37 has its own unique tuning, its own unique shock. The shocks in the front on the 37 are actually different rod diameter length. All those things are kind of accommodating the 37 inch configuration. The frame is different to accommodate the spare. So it's not something like, hey, it's just, we just threw 37s on it at the end and shipped it out of the plant. This is a methodical approach to planning something, because we know that when you get it off road, the basics like running clearances, approach, departure, brake angle, those things are, you can't ever get enough of that.
Right, exactly. And these are the kind of things that developing the truck the way a manufacturer, the way you were developing the Raptor, is so different than a backyard mechanic just throwing stuff on a truck and doing things kind of in a piecemeal way, isn't it?
It is. I mean, because if you look at it, right, so we run durability in the desert out west, and the testing that we do, that we've done now for over a decade, right, when we're putting thousands of miles on Raptors, so that if we're going to break something, we're going to break it, not the customer. And so when you then take that, right, and you then bring that 37 inch configuration went through that exact same process. Okay, so we ran those tests both with the 35 and then again with the 37. Okay, because it's important that Raptor has a name. Raptor is a brand that's associated with F-150 that's built for tough. That's all. We're all part of the same family, right? Well, we need to make sure that when we say it's ready to go, it's built for tough. So it went through that rigorous testing out in the desert, hundreds and hundreds of miles, hundreds and hundreds of hours spent developing and changing and tweaking and swapping out parts and getting the right, just the dialing in the last 1% to get it right where we wanted it to be.
Yeah, it is quite a chore, as you well know. And Tony, you've been really generous with your time. In just a few minutes, what should the listener really know about the 2021 Raptor that we haven't already told them? What are the couple bullet points you want to leave them with?
Yeah, so we've spent a lot of time talking about its off-road capability, and we've talked a lot about, I think, the chassis and how it translates to both a truck that's very impressive off-road, but also a complete daily driver that you can live with. But some of the things that are also kind of things that should be said is that the way that it came out the way that the body style came out on the exterior is very indicative of more of the first gen and a bit less of the second generation truck. And so when you look at the front of the truck now, I mean, maybe you guys haven't seen it yet. I'm not sure. But when you do see
I saw it yesterday in the briefing. So,
yeah. It's got that width associated with it. It's got the grill now that's going all the way to the headlamps. It's got the skid plate, which has grown over 100 millimeters on each side. So you can imagine the amount of protection we've given the front of the Raptor now. We've added off-road lighting. I was really passionate about adding rigid lighting. They have a really good off-road. Credibility. We wanted them in as part of the truck. We're very selective of suppliers who we let on and who we let brand onto the Raptor, but Rigid is somebody who has earned their place in the off-road space. So we are introducing for the first time fog lamps that are real and help off-road. So those are all kind of design cues. It's kind of kicked back to the Raptor Jet, where the studio used to design some of the cues that are in many of the cladding both on the hood and on the fenders. And then it's the first time that we put we baked some character lines into the fender that kind of look very, very fat. They kind of give that speed look coming off the front and in, and then carry into the box side. And of course, it's just a Raptor that came out very refined and really totally geeked about what we did on the lighting and what we did on our wheel design. I'm really, really happy with how it came out. And then the interior it speaks for itself. The color and materials are inspired by the desert. They're rugged materials that are built for sand intrusion and lots of wear and lots of fun in the desert and kicking up dirt in the trails and spending time in the dunes. And it's kind of that feel that you get when you're in the truck. And then of course we inherit so much great content from the F-150. And it's very connected and it's very over the air capable. And it's just, there's just a lot there in this second gen. It just kind of kept building momentum. And it's just, it's a really great truck, Jack.
Yeah. I mean, we have spent a lot of time talking about it and we've in some ways just scratched the surface of what this brings to the party. What you can tell our listeners is how soon they can see one in showrooms and when they can actually go out and buy one.
Yeah, so I think what we're saying is the summer. We've started the process of now getting it out of the hands of the development team and into the hands of the manufacturing team. So that process has started. So just very soon, next week, when we actually do the official reveal, you'll start to see a lot of trucks running around Dearborn, many without camo for the first time ever. So we're pretty excited about that, because once you start to see them like that and they're not just all painted white or all painted black and they actually are in different colors, that means you're getting close. So I would say the summertime.
Exciting. Well, I can't wait to drive one. I really look forward to it. And I thank you so much, Tony Greco, the genius behind the new Ford F-150 Raptor for 2021, for spending so much time with us. Thanks so much, Tony.
Yeah, thanks for your time, Jack. Appreciate it.
Great to talk to you, and stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. And that was our interview with Tony Greco, who is the Ford Raptor Program Manager. What an exciting vehicle that is. I can't wait to drive one. Tony has me all excited about that, so that should be exciting when we get the chance to do that. And I want to do some desert running. We have plenty of desert out here in Southern California to run, so I can't wait to do that. I also can't wait to thank Chris Teague for being with us, and so glad that he's recovered from that blow to the head that has caused him to all his memory. He doesn't remember anything, but I think he's recovering rapidly.
Thank you, Jack. I will remember to thank everyone for listening to us and to remind them that if they like what they hear, to go ahead and hit the like or subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. That'll help us get in front of more people and hopefully bring them along for the ride with us as well.
Right. We thank them for being along for the ride with us. We'd love to have them. And if they want to share the program with a friend of theirs. We'd love that too. We also want to welcome a new sponsor, Mercury Insurance. So glad they're with us. And I would like to encourage you to check out Mercury Insurance at mercuryinsurance.com. And also check out my book, if you would. My book is called The GR Factor, Unleashing the Undeniable Power of the Golden Rule. It is available on Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, at local bookstores. It's just all over the place. But in any case, check that out, if you would. And thank you so much for being with us right here on America on the Road. We'll be back next time, Chris Teague and I, to tell you more about the world of automobiles. So join us again next time right here on America on the Road.